Welcome to the Texas Appellate Law Podcast, covering topics of interest to lawyers handling civil appellate matters in Texas courts. This podcast demystifies appellate law and pulls back the curtain on the Texas appellate system through conversations with judges, court staff, and top trial and appellate practitioners. Listen in to discover best practices and tips for successfully presenting your case, managing your docket, and promoting efficiency through legal technology. And now here are your hosts, Todd Smith and Jody Sanders.
You're listening to the Texas Appellate Law Podcast. I'm Todd Smith.
And I'm Jody Sanders.
We have today a special guest, Jeff Richardson from New Orleans, Louisiana. Welcome to the show, Jeff.
Hello. Thank you for having me. It's great to be here.
Now, Jeff is our first non-Texan to appear on the podcast, but he is a kindred spirit. For those of us that are appellate practitioners participating and listening to the show, Jeff is a partner at Adams & Rees in New Orleans. Is that right?
That's right. Yeah, we're based in New Orleans, but we've got offices all around the Gulf South portion of the country and through Tennessee, South Carolina, a big part of the country.
That's certainly a firm I'm familiar with. And of course, I've spent quite a bit of time in your fair city, as a number of our folks would, because the Fifth Circuit sits there in New Orleans.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's just sort of almost catty corner from our office.
Are you walking distance to the courthouse?
Absolutely. Yeah. No, I'm in a building that's called, used to be called One Shell Square. So I'm just, there's just a park and one more block between me and the U.S. Fifth Circuit, which is really nice.
Nice. And I know from our advanced visit getting ready for the show, you told me that you were recently certified as an appellate practice specialist by the Louisiana Board of Legal Specialization.
That's right. That's right. I don't know if y'all have a similar program in Texas for appellate specialization.
We do.
Have y'all gone through the program yet in Texas?
I have. I've been board certified for about, I think 14 years now.
We didn't have it until recently here in Louisiana, just a few years ago. But it's a great system. And I'm sure it's similar to Texas. It's a way that if you really focus a lot in appeals, it's a way to sort of show clients that this is something you have a lot of specialty in. And it's been a good process. I guess I was certified, I don't know, maybe 2 years ago now. I forget, something like that.
Okay.
But we just started the system here. It's pretty new.
We have it here. And I know, I think California does, and I believe Florida. And those are the only states that I'm familiar with. But folks familiar with our show will certainly appreciate what level of skill and commitment it takes to become a board certified specialist, whether it's in Texas or Louisiana.
I think in Louisiana, you have to have been doing appellate work as at least a quarter of your practice for like 5 years. You have to have been involved as lead counsel or at least substantial, almost lead counsel for like 25 appeals. You have to have done 5 oral arguments. You have to do some recommendations from other folks. It's one of those sorts of things. And then, of course, you have to take a written test.
Great. Mm-hmm. Well, outside of Louisiana, Jeff is known for a website. I guess you might call it a blog, but it's much more than just a single purpose website. It's known as iPhone JD. And I've been a follower of the site for quite some time and have learned a lot from you, Jeff, about iPhones. And of course, the site's not limited to iPhones, is it?
No, I mean, I talk about it's Apple mobile technology. So I don't really talk about computers. But when I started the site in 2008, I was talking about the iPhone, which was pretty new at the time. It had just come out the year before. But now iPhones, iPads, Apple Watch, those are the big ones that I talk about. But it's really, how can an attorney use those devices to be more productive in the practice of law? So, if you're interested in the game reviews for the latest iPad game, I'm not going to help you out there. But but if you're looking to get work done with your devices, that's what I do. And although most of the readers are lawyers, I will often hear from non-lawyers that say, I'm a doctor or I'm a business person, and I, use similar tools and appreciate your reviews of the latest ways to work with PDF files or take handwritten notes or any of those sorts of things. Because to some degree, anyone trying to get work done is going to use their device in a similar manner.
Absolutely. I will say that whenever there's a new product coming out, I know that you're going to be reviewing it, because I think you may be the one person that I know in this world that I think literally purchases every single device that Apple puts out as they come out.
I love the shiny new gadgets. And, you know, since I have a website, you know, I can always tell my wife, well, you know, I'm not just buying this new iPhone for me. It's so that I can write about it, of course.
Right.
Gives you a good excuse.
Well, one thing that we wanted to do was have you on the show to talk specifically about how you use your iPad. I know you've written some blog posts about this and some articles over the years and going back a couple of years. And I think that was one of the ways that you and I connected was that I wrote a similar blog post. I think I actually stole from you, if you don't mind me saying. And so I've got an interest in this area myself because I am a self-professed Apple fanboy. I don't own every single device that comes out right when it does. You know, my Apple Watch is at least one generation old, although I do have the current version of the iPad and a few other things. But my take on the iPad specifically, one reason why I'm so interested in it is because it seems like where it's trying to go is toward sort of a desktop replacement or a laptop replacement device. You talk about mobility and the usefulness of Apple technology and their devices in mobile practice, but the iPad seems to be the one that really is sort of the game changer. Is that your assessment?
Yeah, I got the first generation iPad when it came out, well, I guess about 10 years ago now in 2010. And, you know, it started being something that this is an interesting device. But over the time, it has become just such an incredibly central part of my law practice. I use it for, you know, so much of what we do is, you know, dealing with documents, and every one of my documents is right there, and writing things. And, you know, there's great writing tools on it. And it's fantastic. I mean, I definitely still use a computer. I use a PC at my office. I use a Mac at home. So I use lots of different devices. And when I'm sitting down to write the appellate brief, you know, I'll often start on my computer, but the iPad's right there next to me. It's a second screen. It's got all the briefs. It's got the record on appeal. It's got everything there. And, you know, when it comes time to revise my brief, I will often just sit down there with my iPad and an external keyboard and do it. It is a very, very important part of my law practice, certainly including my appellate law practice. And because it's just such a fantastic tool. There's so much you can do.
So, Jeff, I know the Fifth Circuit and Texas both have fully electronic records. Does the state of Louisiana have electronic records as well?
Most of the courts do. Yeah, most of the courts do. It varies from circuit to circuit. I wish we were uniform in Louisiana like some other states are. But yeah, so that's fantastic. So when I'm working on an appeal, I mean, I guess we can sort of start there because we all do appellate stuff. Mm-hmm. The first thing I do, of course, is get a copy of the record. Sometimes I've been involved in the case at the trial court level. I love it when I have been, but sometimes I get brought in just for the appeal. And that's the first thing you do is get a copy of the record. And as y'all know, because we're all in the Fifth Circuit, it's, you know, easy to download the record. I usually keep it in, you know, the Fifth Circuit has all the different parts of the record, the different volumes, and I'll normally download those PDF files. And PDF Expert is the app that I'm mostly using nowadays. But there's a lot of PDF apps that you can use on the iPad. And I'll just have a folder that just have all parts of the record in there. And so that's what I'll do to review the record, to highlight things, to annotate things. Within the app, you can create bookmarks. So, you know, usually the table of contents will come across. And so that for each record number, that will already come across because the Fifth Circuit does a nice job with the way that the district courts put the records together. But I will create my own bookmarks so that I can easily look through the bookmarks feature to be, you know, this is the contract. Or, you know, this is the big, you know, the affidavit that's so important, or the witness testimony, things like that. And so that's my first start, is just getting everything into the iPad and going through the record that way to start my process.
That sounds very similar to the workflow that I use. And I'm also a PDF Expert user. It really is a great annotation tool. I use it on my MacBook and also on my iPad. And there used to be a feature in that software where you could basically wirelessly transfer information back and forth. And when they went through the last iteration of it, they kind of killed that. But I think thinking they were going to try to incorporate the Apple Sidecar feature somehow. But that really hasn't ever come to fruition. It's a little more clunky than it used to be. But I don't know about you. I sync things back and forth over Dropbox, and so I just keep a folder with my working file synced on my iPad.
Yeah, for most of my appellate work, that's what I do. Every once in a while, I'll have something under seal, and I'll have to, you know, I don't use Dropbox for stuff like that, but most of the stuff is public anyway, and so that's what I'll do is I'll often download the record on my PC at work, put it in the Dropbox folder, and then I will have PDF Expert on my iPad, you know, just sync with that folder. And so that way, as I go through and annotate the record on my iPad, all my annotations are still there. So if I wanted to look at them on my computer, whether my PC or my Mac, I could also do that as well. But I don't do that very much. Usually, once the record is on my iPad, that's pretty much where I'm working with it from then on.
Sure. Well, my eyes are getting older, and it's sometimes better for me to look at even things that I've annotated on the bigger screen. And the other thing I like to do with that, just incidentally, is I like being able to display two pages at a time on my big screen, because it's kind of like the old appellate records. You know, although the true old paper appellate records, you couldn't do that either because they were all bound at the top, you know, two-hole punched. Mm-hmm. That sounds very similar to my workflow and how I use them too. So I understand from our previous discussions too, you've actually gone beyond just document annotation and review though. You actually use your iPad frequently when you're in advocacy situations like an oral argument.
Absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely. It's so great. So after I've gone through the record and of course written my brief and stuff, once I'm getting ready for oral argument, the app that I love to use the most is called GoodNotes. And I use GoodNotes throughout my law practice to take notes. It creates a virtual page that you can write on using your Apple Pencil stylus. And I have pages that look like a legal pad, you know, in a slightly yellow background with lines on it, just because that's what I'm used to working on. You can certainly write on whatever you want. And I'll take notes to myself, you know, when I'm getting ready for the appeal. But then when it's time to actually draft my oral argument, I will, you know, start a blank page and I will handwrite. I don't write every word of the argument, and even outline makes it sound more structured than what it is, but just sort of, you know, this is the topic I'm going to do. This is the topic. And as I start writing it out, I like doing it in handwriting as opposed to just typing on a computer, because I may have one thing on the right side and I'll have a circle and I'll have a box off to the side. And then, you know, I'll start writing something and I'll realize I want to put even more on that. So I'll cut it and then make a new page and paste it there and then make it even more. And then often what I'll do, a lot of my appellate arguments turn upon law, of course, you know, legal decisions. And so I will just, using Westlaw right there on my iPad, I'll take, you know, the part of the decision that I've highlighted, and I'll just take a screenshot of that part of the decision and crop it in and then paste that into my notebook. So I can say, you know, as the U.S. Fifth Circuit said in the Smith versus Jones case, and then I'll actually have the actual, you know, Smith versus Jones with the words that I'm going to use highlighted right there on the page, so that it saves me the trouble of having to pull out the document. And so I'll go through and, you know, when I prepare for appellate arguments, you know, it will start a few pages, and then by the time I'm done, I may have 10, 15 pages, because I may have like a special page just if I'm asked about this subject. Here's my answers to that subject. And I like that when you're doing it on the iPad, it's you can use different colors. And so, and also, I don't have the best handwriting in the world, unlike my dad, who's an architect, that did not inherit down to me. But with the GoodNotes app, you know, I can go into a mode where I'm doing shapes. And so if I want to put a square around something, it can be perfectly, you know, straight lines. And so just for the type A personality that I have, the notes will look nice and neat. So they get pretty sophisticated by the time that I'm done with it. And so then when I'm ready for oral argument, I have all my notes right there in GoodNotes. And at that point, I've actually done oral argument two different ways, multiple times. Sometimes I actually just take I always have my iPad at the podium with me. Sometimes I actually just use GoodNotes on my iPad. There's a button you can tap at the top, which I forget what it's called, but it puts you in a view only mode so that you don't have to worry about changing the notes. Mm-hmm. And so I get into that view only mode, and you can just swipe on the iPad to go back and forth between notes. And I've done that before, and that works great. Every court that I've ever been in front of allows you to take an iPad up to the podium. Even the U.S. Fifth Circuit, for example, they don't want you to have computers in the courtroom, but if you're an advocate, you can use a computer or an iPad. But then sometimes, and what I will always do is take those notes and print them out. You can just export two PDF files, and I can print them out on a color printer in my office. And so I have the paper version of them, and I have the electronic version. And part of that's just to have a backup, right? You know, what if your mm-hmm. iPad dies or something crazy happens? I've got the paper. But sometimes, you know, the last one I argued before we started all this coronavirus nonsense was in mid-February was the last oral argument I had. And I printed them out, and I just sort of preferred to use the paper there. So I don't really have a preference. Sometimes I actually like having the paper in my hand, because that way I have my iPad at the podium. If somebody asks a question about a case, I've got every important case on there, right? So if I need to jump to the Smith case to see it, it's right there. And that way I can have the notes in one place and my cases or other record, if I have to look at something in the record, another place. So I've done it both ways. And regardless of what I use at the podium, using the iPad to create those notes makes them so much more useful to me, because like I said, they're colorful and they're big and they've got, you know, cases in there. And if I something from the record, I just copy and paste that part of the record and stick it right there on the page. For me, it works great.
Oh, I'm glad to hear about this because I'm very much a conceptual and visual person and I kind of write my notes the same way. And I think the idea of doing them tablet style makes a lot of sense. I'm going to have to look into that because I just love having it laid out that way instead of with the limitations of whatever word processing program you're using.
Jody, you know, when you say graphical, that's important for me because I've worked on the notes, like I can sort of picture the page in my head. Mm-hmm. And so when a judge is asking a question, you know, I know it's on page 3 because I can sort of picture like it was in this box on the side was where I wrote that. And that just helps me get, you know, sometimes you don't need your notes at all. Sometimes it's just in your head, but I can pull it out as I'm talking just to, you know, make sure I cite the right case name. For a visual person like myself and maybe you too, Jody, it just works really well.
Yeah, that's kind of how I do mine. You know, speaking of visual, this is jumping back a little bit, but now that you use your iPad in this way, do you find that it affects the way visually and maybe organizationally that you lay out your briefing? Because a lot of judges are reading on iPads too now at the appellate level, at least certainly in Texas.
Yeah, I mean, when I get to the what we were just talking about for our argument, of course, by that point, the briefing is all done. But I do take handwritten notes the same way as I'm sort of meeting with other attorneys or just brainstorming myself how to do the brief. I will tell you, though, most of the time when I write briefs, I just sit down in front of Microsoft Word and I just start writing. And I find that, you know, when I have that writer's block of how do you start, if I just start with the statement of facts, or just start to get things typed into the computer, once things are there, then I can sort of say, okay, you know, this I was thinking might be my first argument, but I really want to push this further down to third. You know, once it's there, I can move stuff around. But when I'm in that drafting process, for me, the iPad is like the most important role is just being that second screen. It is right there next to my computer monitor to my left so that I'm typing and I'm using the iPad to look at the record, to look at the trial court briefs, to look at the legal opinions, to look at the exhibits, to look at whatever. And that's the big use for me. And I love having everything right there. So even if I'm over the weekend and I'm going to work on my brief some more, I don't have to worry about, did I bring this home from my office? I mean, everything's in digital form. Everything's on my iPad. It's just all right there.
You mentioned PDF Expert, as we discussed. You mentioned GoodNotes, which I actually resisted GoodNotes for a long time, but you, Jeff, converted me. I tried every other handwriting app there was to try out there, and you've been saying for years that GoodNotes is the best one, and I finally bought into what you said, and I've been using it myself for probably about 6 months, and I really do enjoy it. And just like PDF Expert, GoodNotes has a Mac app so that I can look at my handwritten notes up on my bigger screen if I choose to do that. So it's super helpful. Besides those two bits of software, though, is there anything else you're using on your app software-wise that you'd like to highlight for us?
You know, for my appellate work, those are really the primary tools. I mean, as I sort of get broader into practice of law, there's a million apps that I'm using all the time and that I encourage lawyers to use. Like, you know, I think that nowadays you need to have a good password manager. I use 1Password, which is great because it's completely cross-platform and it gets me logged into all of my courts and, you know, all of the websites, and I can have complicated passwords. I mean, I could talk forever about how much I love using 1Password, and I really think you need to use a password manager nowadays. And, you know, lots of other apps that I use when I'm not doing appellate work, but I'm doing trial work and dealing with depositions. I love using an app called Lit Software Makes the Trial Pad and the Transcript Pad. Transcript Pad is the one that I use for my deposition transcripts. You know, one of y'all noted, and I was listening to one of y'all's earlier podcasts, and I forget which one of you talked about being an appellate lawyer is often as much of the phrase is appellate avoidance or something like that, you know, managing things at the trial court level so that maybe you don't need the appeal or you're in better shape for appeal. And so I'm often brought in, as I'm sure that you two are, to work with the trial attorneys at the trial court level, drafting the complicated and the case dispositive briefs, for example, working on those sorts of things. And so, I mean, that's an example. If I'm working on motions for summary judgment, I'm going to load all of my transcripts from the case into Transcript Pad on my iPad. And Transcript Pad's a great app. I don't know if y'all have ever seen it before or used it, but as you're reading a transcript, you can, you know, you can highlight things, but instead of just highlighting everything in yellow, like you might do on paper, you issue code it. When I say that this, I'm highlighting, you know, on this page from line 1 to 6, I associate it with an issue like, you know, comparative fault or, you know, prescription, which is statute of limitations in Louisiana or whatever the issue is. And so that, when I then go to write the summary judgment motion, I can just say, you know, print me a report of everything that I tagged on the issue of the prescription issue. And it'll just all be right there for me. It makes it so much easier to draft the brief and to have everything. And Transcript Pad works across every transcript in the case. So that's a great tool at the trial court level I sort of consider that appellate work because I feel like I'm making the best argument to preserve issues. And of course, you want to win at the trial court level, but if you win, the other side's going to appeal. And if you have to appeal, you've served it right. So that's a great app that I use a lot too.
You know, Texas, and I'm sure Louisiana's probably doing the same, has now gone to completely remote hearings right now. I would think right now you're talking to us on your iPad, right?
Right.
So having all that stuff in there probably would make it a lot easier to do Zoom hearings and remote hearings and all that, to be able to access all your documents right there in real time. I would think that's something that's probably going to be useful to a lot of litigators.
Yeah, we're definitely in a brave new world now. I have not done an online appellate argument yet. One of my partners on our appellate team at our firm has got one in a week or two before, I think it's the state Fifth Circuit, maybe it's the U.S., I forget. But you know, this might be more of a thing. I saw that, was it the Texas Supreme Court just had one online recently? And it was funny because all the Texas Supreme Court justices had like a picture of the court behind them, which I thought was
that's right.
Yeah, with the two advocates at the top that looked interesting.
I think we could probably do a show about that, Jody.
I think we should.
Well, that's a topic for another time. But Jeff, another major reason why I thought it would be a great idea to have you on is knowing how you are with new hardware when it comes out. I had paid attention to the fact that there was a new iPad Pro coming out soon. And also they're pairing it with a new keyboard. And these are the current versions of these devices are something that I'm using currently. But of course, you know, my antenna goes up when Apple puts out anything new, particularly iPad or iPhone. And I know, you know, you're the same way. I wanted to invite you to kind of give us a preview of what we can expect from this new hardware, and including the keyboard, because it just looks so cool. I'll throw out there in the beginning here that it's incorporating a trackpad into it, so you won't actually have to touch the screen when it's mounted to the keyboard to move the cursor around, which I thought was kind of a nice addition. But what are some of your favorite things, or what's this hardware going to do that's going to be great for lawyers like us?
Sure. So when people talk to me about what iPad should they use in their law practice, you know, there's a whole range of iPads now. There's the cheapest, just called the iPad, which you can get for a few $100s, all the way up to the iPad Pro, which is what I use. And even within the Pro, there's two different sizes, which I'll talk about in a second. But let me begin by saying that all of them work great. You know, the newer ones are faster and better. But if you're going to really use the iPad a lot, I really love the iPad Pro line, because the iPad Pro has smaller bezels. And so more of your screen is devoted to actually seeing things on the screen. And, you know, it's not unlike the transition between when the pre-iPhone 10 iPhones and then the iPhone 10, where they took away the button at the bottom. And once they took away that button, they had more screen space, so you can see more things on your screen at one time. It's similar. And so I find that if you know, when you're going to be using your iPad a lot in your law practice, just having more on your screen is better. And that's also why I prefer the larger 12.9-inch size, because it just makes the documents easier. And maybe this is just, you know, with my eyes, it's easier to have things a little bit bigger. But, you know, when I look at documents or exhibits, they're essentially full size and maybe even bigger than full size when you have your iPad turned in the landscape orientation, because it's a little bit wider than an 8.5 and 11 sheet of paper would be. So I just, you know, many times when I'm working with records too, I mean, I do some oil and gas appeals where you have these leases that go back to the 1950s and it's a fourth generation copy and it's hard to read.
Oh, yeah.
Being able to zoom in and make things bigger and see it, just, gosh, that makes such a difference. So any iPad is great, but the iPad Pro really, I mean, the Pro's in the name for a reason. It makes a difference. And so Apple is on its fourth generation of the iPad Pro. The newest one that you mentioned, Todd, just came out. And the 2020 version of the iPad Pro is a fantastic iPad. It's very, very similar to the 2018 version, which is what I'm talking to you on right now. The changes, frankly, don't make a difference for attorneys. It's things like 3D and stuff, things that more graphics people will be interested in. So if you can get a good deal on a 2018 iPad Pro, you know, that's fantastic too. But any of those iPads are great because they have those big screens. They use USB-C, which gives you access to have all sorts of accessories that you can have plugged into it and stuff, which I find incredibly useful. And then one of the newest things, as you just alluded to, is Apple has suddenly got real serious with keyboard and external mouse and trackpad support. Apple just updated the operating system on the iPad just a few weeks ago. And although in the past you could use a mouse with an iPad, the support has gotten 1,000 times better. Now I would say it's as good as a computer. In some ways, it's even better than a computer, because the little cursor as you hover over different parts of your screen, the shape of the cursor changes to sort of indicate what it is that you're going to be tapping on. And when I'm sitting down with my iPad and I have an external Bluetooth keyboard and I have an external mouse, it's really great now. I mean, it really can be a substitute for a computer. And people have always been using iPads to substitute for computers to a certain degree, but just this year in 2020, it's gotten so much better. And the product that you referred to, the Magic Keyboard, which has been announced, and I think it goes on sale in May, I believe, but it looks fantastic. I mean, Apple does such a great job designing things that look incredible. It's got the keyboard built in and a trackpad built in. But whether you use a trackpad or a mouse, you can just get, you know, serious work done with your iPad. It's really fantastic.
So if I heard you correctly, the specs may not be so much better on this new iPad as to cause someone like me to update their 2018 model.
No.
Because most of what I do is just the same as you. I'm reviewing documents, I'm typing, I'm marking things up, I'm annotating, and I'm writing in GoodNotes or something else by hand. That doesn't require anything 3D or highly, you know, graphic.
Yeah.
What's really piqued my interest is this keyboard, because I have been trying for quite some time to make an iPad sort of my laptop replacement. And this year, I think I'm due for a new laptop. And so I'm actually thinking that if I can get that keyboard and use my current iPad, I might actually be able to do away with the laptop and put like a supercharged Mac Mini on my desk or something like that, that would give me, you know, years and years of service and be more powerful than the MacBook I've been carrying around since for 3 years.
Yeah, you can
now
definitely do that. The brand new fancy keyboard, the Magic Keyboard that Apple has coming out soon, it will work with the 2018 version of the iPad Pro or the new one. The major difference between the 2020 and the 2018 version is the new one uses something called LIDAR, L-I-D-A-R, so that when the camera is looking at your room, it's actually shooting lasers off of it, all the objects in the room, so it can see 3D where things are. And I believe that, you know, we are going to have a future in a few years where our mobile devices are much more sophisticated on augmented reality and virtual reality. And so I think Apple put LIDAR in the iPad because it's probably going to be coming to the iPhone later this year. You know, there's going to be a world where all the devices have LIDAR and all, you know, you can hold up your phone or your iPad or whatever, what have it, to the world around you, and it understands that. That's all fascinating stuff that, you know, looks like a lot of movies we've been watching for years. I don't think any of it has anything to do with the practice of the law right now.
Right. You know,
maybe one day we'll all be, you know, using LIDAR for scanning our, you know, scanning the crime scene or something. I don't know. But so for right now, for attorneys, it doesn't make a difference whether you have the 2018 or the 2020. But that new keyboard's great. For me personally, I don't use a keyboard with my iPad very often. I mean, when I use it, it's essential, but maybe it's like 10-20% of the time that I use my iPad. And so I don't want to have a case for my iPad that has a keyboard in it, because that just makes it unnecessarily heavy. But if you're the sort of person that uses a keyboard more often, and I know many of them, then yeah, that new one looks interesting. Apple hasn't yet said how heavy it makes the overall device, so that'll be interesting to see. But for me, I just have in my briefcase an external Bluetooth keyboard that I just pull out when I'm ready to use it. And I have just an external mouse that I pull out when I'm ready to use it. But then I put them away, you know, 80% of the time when I'm just using my iPad with my Apple Pencil stuck to the top of it. So,
sure.
Fantastic. Well, listen, we want to be respectful of your time and kind of keep us close to our 30-minute limit. But now I've got to go out and start doing some Apple shopping as soon as we get off this podcast. You've convinced me that I'm missing out on a lot of stuff out there in my appellate practice. So thank you. We always like to kind of leave our readers, you've given a lot of great tips, but we'd like to leave our listeners with war stories or tips, anything that you'd like to share. And you've given us a million of them. So if you'd like to make it 1,000,001, we'll give you an opening right here to kind of put that in at the end.
I have one specifically in mind, which is this. We all know in a courtroom that you need to like turn off your device as many times, you know, the courtroom will have a sign saying that, right? Okay. So here's my war story. It's a two-part tale. I was arguing an appeal last August in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, and I had my iPad there with me and my iPhone was just in my pocket, and I had it on silent, but it was still on. I should have turned it off. And I was about to get up to argue and my phone rings. Now, I was on silent, so it just vibrated. Nobody knew about it but me. But it was, you know, I'm literally walking to the podium and my phone is ringing and it was distracting me. And I'm like, oh, this is so horrible. And of course, you know, it was a junk mail telemarketer call. It was so ridiculous. And I get those calls so infrequently. I'm like, it's literally going to happen as I'm walking to the podium. So fast forward to this year. I had two appellate arguments this year, one in January, one in February, and I forget which one it was. But one of the two of them, my iPhone was completely turned off. My iPad was on, but I don't use an iPad that has cellular built in. So there's no, you know, everything, I thought everything was fine, right? I'm getting to go up to the podium. And don't you know, my Apple Watch, I have the Series 5 that's got the cellular in it. My Apple Watch starts to vibrate because someone's calling me. Like, as I'm walking to the podium, like, what the heck is this? And of course, again, it was a telemarketer. Now, when that happens, you can, there's a button on the side of the Apple Watch. If you tap it the first time, it stops. I say ringing. It wasn't making noise. It was just vibrating. Nobody noticed it but me. And if you tap it a second time, it will send the call to voicemail. But, and of course, it was a spam call. But I'm like, see, I thought I was being so good for turning off my iPhone, completely forgetting that my watch is a phone. And so now I know for the future that either to put the phone into do not disturb mode, which I could have done just with a simple tap and I did not think about it, or just turn the watch off completely as I go up to the podium. So learn from my mistakes and don't get distracted. That's my advice to you.
Until a new device comes out that takes calls and you forget about that one.
Exactly. And then one day our glasses will be taking calls.
That's right. That's
to
right.
Turn off your glasses before you get up to the podium. So
you'll have to tap your temple to turn off the chip that's implanted in you somewhere.
That's exactly right.
Oh, my goodness. Well, this has all been fantastic, Jeff. Thank you so much for taking the time to join us and visit with us. And I know that our listeners will get a lot out of what you talked about today. And I know I have. And I'm definitely going to buy that keyboard. I may not upgrade that.
I can't wait
iPad,
to hear about it.
But I'm definitely.
Yeah, I don't plan to buy one on day one, so I'm going to look forward to hearing what you think about it and go from there. But thank you for inviting me today. I love that y'all have an Appellate Law podcast. This is fantastic. I'm jealous. This is great. I wish we had a resource like this specific to Louisiana, but I'm sure you've got folks even outside of Texas that are interested in a lot of what y'all have to say. But Appellate Law, I really love Appellate Law. There's just always something new to talk about in terms of tricks and techniques. And so kudos to both of you.
Well, that's what we're counting on. Hopefully we can maintain a podcast for, you know, a good long time. One of the barriers to getting this started was, you know, what are people going to want to listen to us talk about for, you know, every week or every other week for some extended period. But so far we've had a lot of success in coming up with guests, and we're just grateful for you again for being on the show.
Absolutely. And to our listeners, thanks for listening to this episode. If you're enjoying the podcast, please recommend it to colleagues you think might benefit from listening.
Taking the time to rate us on Apple Podcasts would be great too, and give us a review as well. We appreciate everyone who's done that for us so far.
And if you have questions, thoughts, or comments, please shoot us an email, message us on Twitter, or reach out through the podcast Facebook page. We'd love to hear from you.
Until next time, we wish you all the best and hope you're staying safe and healthy.
Thanks for listening to the Texas Appellate Law Podcast. To stay in touch with your hosts, suggest topics, or express interest in coming on the show, visit us online at texapplawpod.com or on Twitter at texapplawpod. The views expressed by the participants on this podcast are their own and not those of their law firms, courts, or employers. Nothing you hear on this show establishes an attorney-client relationship or is legal advice.